Welcome to The Evolution of Parenting. I'm Irona, an advanced certified life coach, certified speaker coach, international speaker, and more. But more importantly, most importantly for me, I'm a mother. With 17 years in the fields and studies of early childhood development, psychology, and coaching, I've come to the realization that the role of parenting never stops, but it does change. In fact, it has to change. In season one, we explored some of the foundational themes of parenting. For season two, we'll be exploring various topics with special guests who can delve into these topics and subject matters from a more expert perspective. And from there, we'll dive into understanding the impact around the choices we make as parents regarding these particular issues and what we're enabling or disabling in our children. I hope to tie in some of the foundational themes from season one to highlight a few ways parents can be more proactive in their approaches and their parenting styles. Remember, parents are creating a part of the future world, and it's time to think about the legacy we're leaving behind and the ripple effects it will have. So let's dive in with our guest for today's episode. Welcome, Sapna Rod. Please, Sapna, if you would, tell our audience a little bit about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me, Irona. This is such a pleasure talking about parenting. I'm a conscious parenting coach and an NLP practitioner, and I've been on this parenting space for 8+ years. And I work a lot with parents of teens, especially. And I'm an author of the book, Yelling to Zenning. I'm a speaker, and I've been featured on various outlets on national TV via The List and Newsweek magazine, to name a few. But my favorite thing to do when I'm not working with parents is to get on some adventure and figure out what's happening in the world. What are the other ways people live and believe and love and share? That's another favorite hobby of mine.
I love that. That's wonderful. It's really important to also show our children that exploration is vital to living. So I love that you do that, because it's really showing your children living by example. That's what I call it. You know, we are the example for our children. And so the examples that we give them are how they inform their life and the choices that they make around them. So the topic that Sapna and I were talking about previously was about technology. And I'd love to dive into the parenting choices we make around technology and hopefully bring in a little bit of the themes of personal integrity and self-motivation when it comes to how we utilize technology. So Sapna, if you would, give us your view on parenting. And you and I both know we come from a world in which we didn't have the same kind of technology when we were growing up. And as life changes and life evolves and technology moves forward and advances, we've noticed a variety of different trends, both the good and the bad and the ugly. So let's talk a little bit about that. What are your thoughts on technology when it comes to parenting?
Yeah, right. Like, we grew up with TV, but I would tell parents TV is better any day compared to a screen that's right in front of our face and it's so hard to get it off. TV, we have to look for a remote. We have that pause there. We get to choose. But on a phone, when you're constantly scrolling, it's very, very addictive, because it engages all our senses, our eyes, we're listening to the sounds, and it's so engaging, it's so hard. So TV is better any day. But having said that, technology itself is not bad. It's like a knife, right? It's like a tool. What are you using it for? That is where the issue comes. Are you overusing it? Is it becoming detrimental to your connections around? Are you getting more isolated? Those are the questions we need to ask, rather than blaming the technology itself. It can be a big source of, you know, it's a resourceful thing. A tech is a resourceful thing. But are you using it as a resource, or is it taking over you? That's the questions we need to ask.
Yes, I love that. I say it all the time. We build tools in this life, right? Technology is a great tool. But we need to look at it as, are we using it as a weapon? Are we using it as a coping mechanism? Are we using it as a maladaptive behavior to replace something else? Or are we using it to numb us to the rest of living? So we have to like really investigate, how are we using it in our lives? Is it a situation for our children that's a give and a take? If your child is so excessively responsive when you remove that technology, what does that tell you about them? And I always make this point, and I will make it every single time, because we actually have enough data and research now to show us that a handheld device in the hands of a child whose functional critical thinking skills and that prefrontal cortex, impulse control, critical decision making, and all of those things is not fully developed. And that's not fully developed, we know, until our mid to late 20s. So if you're handing a child a device and you're not putting any parameters around that device and you're just handing it off to them to keep them occupied while you're food shopping, while you're at the doctor's office, while you're driving a car, while you're this, that, and the other, having a meal and so on. We know that with unfettered access, we're developing in our children a true addiction. It's not just like an addiction, it is an addiction, because it's hitting the same receptors in the brain that drugs do and alcohol does. So we need to understand that if you're hitting the same reward center in the brain, then essentially you're giving your child a drug.
That's so true, Yorana. And there are two parts to this, which I want to talk about. One is, like you said, the addiction. What's the addiction? They're not able to sit with the feelings of boredom is when they run towards this electronics. Mm-hmm. Boredom becomes so unbearable, but that is where creativity comes from. That's where you want to explore. You are likely to come up with something. You are in the nature of building something. That's one thing, inability to sit with it. And then like other addictions, like not just drugs, shopping and smoking, drinking, gossip, all these, it becomes a part of it. And the second thing is, once you become aware that there is something underneath these addictions, now parents have to be ready. If they're going to pull the thing off, now children will ask our presence, right? Something to replace, our presence to borrow from, our regulated self for the child to borrow from.
Yeah.
Start with the parents to work for. Now be ready. Like if I tell my nephew who's 7, no, you can't. Your mom said you cannot play. If I'm what we know, I watch over him sometimes and there are some rules and he's not allowed to play after 30 minutes. Now he's asking for me. Now I have to pull out a board game or I'll sit and do an art book with him or read a book for him. Now I need to be replaced by that, right? For a while at least, until he finds the connection. That's what is lacking now. First, the knowledge of what's going underneath. And second, yeah. Are we available and present? What we expect, right? I told you to get off the screen, or why are you addicted to the screen? Or right. And how does that show up? We start yelling at our children, not understanding what's happening. We don't see, are we off of the electronics when we need to?
Exactly. Right. And that's super important. We shouldn't be telling our children to get off technology when we're stuck on it as well. So if there's a rule, we call it our house rules, if we're making a rule, and that is that, you have 30 minutes to play this thing, to play this game. And then after that, we're done and we're all going to engage in something else. Or mommy has to go make dinner and daddy has to go do the laundry. So what are you going to do for yourself? Because that's the other thing too. Parents feel like, well, I just don't have the time. When do I get all of these things done? I'm exhausted. I've got, my job and then I come home. And then, so it's not about the quantity of time you spend with your children. It's about the quality of time. And what it does is it builds in them the self-motivation to start finding ways to occupy their time that are more in, building ingenuity, that are building creativity and things of that nature. that are getting their own responsibilities and tasks done. You know, my son is six. He just turned six, and he knows that there are things that he has to do. And it's really funny because now during this time, he is pushing back on those moments of like, I don't want to have to be responsible for this and that. And it's that conversation. I said, well, do you see daddy and mommy being responsible for these things? Yes. Okay. What's different here? You know, and we investigate that, we have that conversation without judgment in place, but acknowledging that we see you're frustrated with that you have to clean up your room. We understand that. So how can you make it fun? And this is where self-motivation comes in really importantly. You know, when we walk away from something that's an addictive, easy mechanism, like a device, and we walk into our responsibilities, how do we motivate ourselves to do those responsibilities? How do we help our children find their motivation to do those things? Motivation is really hard when it comes to building up responsibilities, when it comes to those things that we're less motivated to do, right? So we have to pair the things that motivate us with the things that we're not so motivated for. If my son loves, he loves music and he loves dancing. So it's like, okay, it's a dance contest while you're cleaning up your room, and, you know, we'll put the music on freeze, and then you have to freeze and you can't touch anything. And then you've got to go. And like, let's see how much time that takes. These are the ways that we can help them build their own motivation to the point where then they're just doing these things because it's become second nature and it's not such a huge mountain to climb. You know, it's not like, oh, I have to do my chores, but rather I'm going to get my chores done so that I can then go and do something I enjoy. You know, it becomes less of a mountain when you can put in a little bit of enjoyment into it as well.
Well, that's a great point that you tell, Yorana. But the thing is, when it comes to education, it's the same thing, right? What you're saying, adding fun to something you're not that much that interested to. Same thing goes when it comes to education. You know, I get a lot of complaints from my clients who are parents that my child is not motivated. Yeah. I help parents investigate what is their expectation. Now, like, let's say math. Some kids are they love math, some don't. So how about we focus on the stuff they love? So they stay motivated. Like, let's say they love art, they love science, and that's going to keep them motivated. I understand math, you don't like it. How about we just get through it? Because we have to reframe. Life cannot, we cannot have everything we like. There are some things we have to do, some chores. So we show them the bigger picture. When we do these tiny things, what's the bigger picture? You have a clean home. When you have a clean home, you feel good about yourself. And then what? You're also motivated to study. You feel good about yourself. You feel that you have completed a task. It's about adding those small moments to show them the bigger picture, one, and focusing on what they actually like. Motivation. Motivation comes from the joy within, and they're connected to that subject, right?
Yeah.
When you love something, we know this. When we love something, people have to peel us off from that stuff.
Right. It's true.
Nobody has to tell you to stop.
I would love to dial into this for a moment, because a lot of people are like, but what does that look like in real time? So I want to give an example for people listening. Let's say my son is really good at math. He's just really good with his numbers. He's not as good with his alphabet and his letters and stuff like that. And so what we do is we pair the two together. You know, okay, how many letters are on this page? Well, he loves math. He loves counting. So now he's pairing something he loves with something he doesn't like as much. That's what we mean by finding what I call these things. There's a difference between your intrinsic motivators and your extrinsic motivators. Intrinsically means that it's something that comes not just naturally and easy to you, but something you also find enjoyment in. So if somebody loves nature, if your kid loves nature, take the homework outside, do it in nature. Or if it's too cold outside or it's too hot outside, find a way to pair that nature with indoors, you know? So let's say they love, collecting leaves or collecting stones. Wonderful. So collect a bunch, bring them inside. And then if they don't like doing their numbers, but now they've got their stones, they've got that and their, or their leaves, and they're counting those things. So you're pairing the nature with the thing that they're less inclined to do. That's intrinsic motivation. It's building both extrinsic and intrinsic motivators together, which means that you're optimally motivating a child to do something as opposed to suboptimal motivation. When suboptimal motivation, when you say, you know, you have to do it just because you have to do it, it feels like a large burden. So that is suboptimal motivation. But optimally motivating a child to do something is by pairing the thing they have to do with the thing they enjoy doing. And that's the thing. That's the difference. You know, my son's really into Minecraft. So sometimes we're crafting stories and using words around a Minecraft story. That's his motivator to do the letters, to do the words. Well, what, how do you spell that? You know, much more optimally motivated that way. And as you build life, you build those in naturally, and it becomes less of a huge monumental task to get through. But I'd love to go back to technology for a moment when it comes to integrity. I personally feel that one of the reasons we don't see parents saying, wow, this is really bad, is because we're thinking, it's not so bad for us, so why is it so bad for them? And when I think about integrity, I think about, well, how am I being most integral to myself? If I am spending, if I know that I would actually like to achieve some things on a weekend, right? But all I'm doing all weekend is watching TV, I feel bad at the end of that day. And when I do that, I don't feel integral to myself. I don't feel like I held myself accountable and was, you know, really aligning my integrity with what I want to do, versus what I'm not feeling very motivated, you know, I'm just feeling like, whatever. And then we feel a little bit of a sense of shame in there. And again, that hits our integrity, right? So what's something you've seen when parents struggle because, you know, again, exhaustion, they're working all day, they're, you know, exhausted. What's a struggle with when it comes to technology that you've heard or complained, or a feeling of shame, perhaps, that they're like not doing the things they really want to be doing with their kids?
Yeah, and I love this question. Shame, first thing is when, you know, I have my clients come and say, oh, I tell my child so many times, but he or she keeps doing it. How many times to tell her, him or her, they don't listen and blah, blah, blah. They go into this rant. Not understanding the difference between shaming your child and guilt tripping your child. There's a big difference. Shame, what is shame? Saying that you are bad, you don't get this, you are lazy, you don't listen, you are defiant. Versus guilt is you're a good kid, you're having trouble with following rules. I understand, but you did this again and looks like you need more help. It's separating the person from the action. But unknowingly, parents end up shaming the child. That damages their spirit. They think this is how they were born. So it's very difficult for them to change. This is where, when parents do the work, you know, they encounter self-compassion. That's something they're so disconnected with, parents are, with themselves. When they're so disconnected to compassion for themselves, it's hard to have compassion for their children. Some parents even say that, you know, I can have compassion for my child, but it's so hard to be compassionate towards myself.
Right. Absolutely. And we see that in relationships too. And in just in the general world, when you're a person who's more willing to give, usually that giving is towards others rather than ourselves. Right.
But then it again comes from lack, right? How can you give something that you don't have? It's like an empty vessel. How will you, we have to first fill, so we are overflowing with that. So this is why we do the work, you and I, we do the work, we work with parents. So first they understand terminologies, which is so important, which has been huge in my life, in the work that I do with my clients, is understanding the words first, connecting to themselves, learning about compassion. Because here, let me tell you a story. There was once a farmer who had a horse and a donkey. And this a farmer's son, one day what he did is he made the horse run and he made the donkey chase the horse. And the donkey, you know, it doesn't run. Mm. So what he does is ties up crackers to the tail of the donkey. And the donkey runs. It runs past the horse and it wins the race. And people cheer it and it feels good about winning. But what happened? It hurt itself, right? Mm. In the fear of the crackers, it hurt itself. So this is what we people do in the chase of getting something. We hurt ourselves. And we think compassion will not make us run. Actually, if you're clapping for somebody, is when we run forward. But we think we use the shame as crackers, like he used crackers to the donkey. Yeah. Shame is thinking that is going to make the child or make ourselves run faster. But it's the other way around. Compassion makes us run faster.
Yes.
Compassion is the key. I understand parents these days have too much work. It's difficult. You know, we have these, as coaches, we have these tools. But where's the fuel coming from for them to use these tools? The fuel is connection, compassion, forgiveness to yourself. And that comes again from compassion. And then you can use the tools, right?
Right. And I also want to point out, you cannot make a change overnight. Change takes consistent small steps, manageable steps. So one of the most important things that I tell my clients all the time and everybody is that if you have one goal, just one, and make it small, make it manageable, make it doable. If it's a huge goal, the weight of that sits on us. And that's when the guilt and the shame pour in, because we're feeling this monumental idea of this thing that we want to accomplish. All right, that's it. No more technology in my home. We can't do that overnight. It doesn't work that way. And usually when we burn it really fast, really bright, it burns out really fast, really quickly. So we need to do it in small measured increments, in doable, manageable ways. And that is the best thing for parents who are overwhelmed, exhausted. We're not saying, you know, okay, that's it. Now, every time you come home from, you know, from work and your kids are home and they're watching TV, immediately turn off the TV and immediately engage the rest of your evening with your family. No, you have to start it small. So if it used to be that you're, you know, if it is that your kids, basically you come home and it's TV is on for the entire evening until you, you know, or everybody's stuck in their devices for an entire evening until you get ready for bed. Okay. Scale that back a little bit. Okay. Tonight we're going to save the last like half hour or the last 15 minutes. We're going to turn off our devices and we're going to talk. We're just going to talk, you know? Okay. And you do that for a good week. And then the next week comes and you say, okay, now we're going to do it for 30 minutes and we're going to incorporate maybe, you know, doing it with our meal, you know, let's have dinner together with no devices.
That's so great. And having the conversation beforehand, right?
Yes.
We are planning to do this. So it doesn't come as a shock, being very clear about that. And if you have laid those boundaries, children will push back.
Yeah.
You know, having those expectations, having those conversation, what are we going to do? Having the plan laid out. And if your child, like let's say you give your child 30 minutes, and they're playing a game here. That means there's a completion process happening in a game. Understanding what games your child is playing. And like my son would say, oh, I'm finishing up this game. It's difficult for them to get off a game. We don't want to get off a game, right? But seeing if they're in flow, you can tell them, okay, finish up the game. Yeah, don't start another one. And I'm going to be right next to you until you finish off.
Yes.
Yeah. Having those, it makes the child better about them, feel better about themselves. And
yeah, and making them also be aware of the choices they make. So let's say they're watching a show or they want to watch a show and you say, okay, well, you have 30 minutes to watch a show. Don't pick an hour show that you're going to feel bad about that's going to be over before you finished it. One thing that I've noticed with my son is that he'll do that. So I said, all right, here's the choice you have. You can pick this show, but then that means that you can't watch the whole thing. Okay, which means that you'll watch the rest of it another day. That's a good thing because, hey, it's there. It's still there for you. That's a wonderful thing. And it helps them detach a little bit better to know that it's still something they can come back to. Or you can pick a show that's 30 minutes or under. And then that way you'll feel like, okay, I completed that thing. And now I'm good. You know, I think one of the things that we fear is when the kids are, you know, here's where I see a lot of parents go wrong though. Oh, I'm not finished yet. And then you're like, all right, we'll finish up. And then they keep going. And you're like, did you finish? Oh no. What's going on? They don't do the follow-up side of that. Like, okay, finishing doesn't mean another hour of this. Finishing means that you have a couple of minutes to resolve what you're doing and to get to a point that a stop point, you know? But I want to go back to technology when it comes to infants. I want to drive into this for a moment because something that I've seen in parenting in these last number of years that has really frightened me has been parents handing their infants pieces of technology. An infant does not need technology. An infant needs environmental input. They need to be a part of the environment around them. Yeah. One of the reasons we have such a disconnected society is because we've started that disconnection from the time they're little.
Yeah.
So this is something I've seen, and I want to hone in on it. When parents are video recording themselves, video recording their children, their babies, at every turn, they're taking video, and their phone is in front of their face. In that moment, they think they're capturing these wonderful moments, but what they're actually doing is disconnecting from the moment. Mm. Because what their child really needs, especially infants who are helpless to do anything for themselves other than take in what's around them, their infant is absorbing the phone, mm-hmm. not the person behind the phone. And so I have likened this to putting your infant into solitary confinement, the way prisoners are. When you think about it, a baby's vision is very narrowed, right? This vision doesn't immediately come into play in immediacy. There's time. So their vision is narrowed. If a phone is right in front of them, imagine the only thing they're seeing is that. They're not seeing your face. They're hearing maybe a disembodied voice, mm-hmm. but they're not making eye contact or seeing your facial expressions and all of the nuances of emotions that are happening on the face. And that is such an important thing for infants to take in because it is the first key to connecting them to one of the core needs of humans, which is connection. And they're not connecting that way. So I tell parents, the other thing is, you may have these videos of it, but you're disconnected from the moment. There is something beautiful and magical that happens when you make eye contact with a person, but especially when you make eye contact with a person you love, and especially when you make eye contact with your child whom you unconditionally love. There is a wealth of beauty in that moment. And when we say being present, we're not saying be with them physically, like in the same space. We're saying be a part of it. Mm-hmm. Don't disconnect by a piece of device, but rather put that down. This is not the time for that. Enjoy the every nuance that you have with your baby.
Yeah. That's wonderful what you just said. And we need to start looking into the stories we have brought up in this culture in today's day and age. We are so used to looking on the outside and we fill ourselves, right? Like, why are we doing this? Why are we putting this phone in front of our child so we can share those baby pictures? I understand we like to have this collection of memories because it will go so fast, but if you constantly doing this as an addictive manner, then we need to look into what is fueling that addiction. Are you wanting to get validation from outside? Are you wanting to fill something, be seen via these pictures? what need is fueling this, right? This constantly putting in front of your child. We need to look into those stories, look into the needs, look into this kind of living where we constantly look on the outside to fill on the inside and change it, topple it upside down and start filling on the inside so we don't need the outside. So
yes, yes, that's beautiful. I love that. That brings in a lot about the self-esteem versus image esteem. For me, I'm constantly trying to explain to people, like, one of the reasons why you don't see a whole lot of pictures of me, like, and a whole lot of social media presence. Like, I have social media presence that's specifically curated by my team because I'm in the moment with my family. This is really funny. My media team kept asking me, like, because I go out with my husband and my son all the time. We have a nature preserve near us. So we love going through the nature preserve. And very rarely do I even bring my phone with me out of the car. So they're like, could you just get a little bit? I'm like, fine, I will, but not for very, you know, so I did it for a little bit. And then I was like, I'm done. And the rest of the time was spent with them. You know, because we don't all have a video, you know, somebody following us around with a camera. And the truth is, we would act differently if we did.
Yeah.
And if you want to be true to yourself and build your own self-esteem and your own personal integrity and your own motivators, you have to do that from the inside out. You can't do it from the reflection of what the rest of the world is looking like. You have to find what values you hold inside and then reflect them outward. And that really builds your resiliency to the desire for building up your image esteem. Because, and I try to explain this to everybody, image esteem, it's not what other people think of you. It's your perception of what other people think of you and the value you place on that. And so instead of valuing what others look to you as, value yourself first. And I promise you that what's reflected out there will be the truth, instead of some kind of cultivated perception. And that is really important when it comes to media, especially for our girls, because we notice this, that the trend of this for usually for neurotypical developing, heterosexual girls in that area, you know, heteronormative females, they tend to be told that it's important to cultivate an image esteem. And as a result, they're really geared towards, you know, how many likes did I get for this post? How many, you know, responses, how many comments and stuff like that. And then every comment that's in the negative or disliked hits them that much harder. And there's a reason for this. It's because when females are young, they're told, care for others. Care for others, take care of others, take care of others. And that care for others and take care of others turns into care about what others think of you.
Yeah.
And it's always otherized, externalized to care for others and care what others think of them. And that pushes that agenda forward when it comes to dealing with social media. And that's why they feel the social media bullying a lot more. That's why they feel their social media presence is important a lot more. And those are the pieces of that puzzle. Where as boys, oftentimes it's about, you know, getting that immediate reward hit in the brain. So playing video games and things of that nature, they're getting an immediate reward response because their brain is saying, like, look at how awesome you're doing with this thing. And that's the reward response. So when it comes to digital devices and technology in that respect, boys are more geared towards that addictive response.
And it's also, it's safe, right? When you're with another person, there's so many things involved here. You can block somebody. You can have another identity. You can, you know, stop talking. People don't know you for you. You can put up a persona.
Yeah.
Much safe, and you get connection. You are getting, it's artificial, but you're getting a kind of a connection. So what if you got all this in real life from your parents? Like, you know, you're seen in real life, you have real friends, one or two real friends.
Yes.
You don't mind showing yourself and you're completely accepted for who it is you are from. Yeah. Home, we can't expect that from the world outside, but your family accepts you.
Yeah.
then these are just some trinkets, right? These are just crumbs and you don't need them.
You don't need them. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what we're both saying at the heart of it all. Understanding what we truly need, mm-hmm. and especially when it comes to the human connection, is the real life human connections we make. We're not saying technology is bad. Look at what's happening right now. Sapna and I have connected through technology and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So technology can be used to connect people who've never been connected before, but there's nuance behind it. We're having a conversation. We're delving deeper. It's not surface level connection. It's a deeper responsive, empathetic response of you and I finding a common ground and finding a thing that we can bond over. So that's really important when it comes to your life. And look, your child may not have 10,000 friends in the real world, but they don't need 10,000 friends to feel secure in their lives. They need a few true friends who accept them for exactly who they are, no more, no less. And they need you as the parent to also accept that. And it starts with reducing the time spent with technology and increasing the time spent with each other.
Very well said.
I love that. That's awesome. So do you have any final thoughts before we say goodbye to our audience today?
That to put connection before correction, because when you connect, and correction becomes very, very easy. So let's start by connecting with ourselves.
Absolutely. Love that. And on that note, happy parenting, people, and may the evolution of your parenting skills be ever in your favor.